I'd like to welcome everyone to another episode of Two Men in a Bible Fighting the Cosmic Battle. Again, or I should say still, I'm Jamie Sanchez, and I'm supposing still you're Pastor Bob Brandon.
I haven't changed.
Look like you're on strike against Gillette today, though.
Is it back already? Man, shaving news is already back.
How are you today, Bob?
Fine. You know, we were talking earlier, worn out from mowing the yard. That's embarrassing. Hey, well, you know you're getting old when mowing the lawn counts as a workout.
Well, that's like a double workout. That's that, when you're getting that old. And so, as I was thinking, you know, between our last podcast, Bob, you know, we've been talking a lot about faith, and, you know, obviously Abraham really exhibits great and strong faith, and we've talked about a lot of the applications, and I don't know, it's just been striking me this week that really, you know, what does that mean when we say faith? You know, what does that really mean? Because, you know, just in, you know, a couple of small instances in my life this past week, it's you really have to have the faith, and sometimes that's scary. And then I think about, you know, what we talk about and what we've talked about with Abraham, and, you know, where he's at now. You know, it's, you know, where we're at in the story, you know, and that is going to be fulfilled. And it's really hard to see that, you know. So it's that's what's ringing on my mind as we start tonight.
Well, that's a great question and a great subject to bring up, and that comes to the fore in this chapter that we're in as well, in Genesis 26. That comes up again, but let's sort of review what we do know about his faith already. And I guess the best way to do this is on the one hand, so imagine, you know, your left hand out there, mm-hmm, with some thoughts in it, and then, but on the other hand, and there's your right hand with some thoughts in it. On the left hand, Abraham was not ignorant of his actual situation, the reality of what he was faced with. In other words, God takes him out, shows him the sky. That's how many children you're going to have. He doesn't have any.
When, and God, how old is that, he at that
age? He's approaching 100. So, well, when the promise was first made, not quite that old, but right, still hadn't even happened, and he's almost 100. Mm-hmm. And Sarah is about 90, and she quit menstruating decades ago. So he's looking at that, you know, going, I know that's what you said, but there's nothing there, humanly speaking. He was cognizant of his situation. He wasn't walking around in some pie-in-the-sky fairy tale world. He was very aware of the reality. God had said this, but not only was it not there, it's not even humanly possible to be there. Mm-hmm. That's in his left hand. But in his right hand, he believed God. Despite all the things in his left hand, he believed that what God said was going to happen. But there was no plan B in God's mind. Abraham had tried plan B, right? Mm-hmm. Oh, let's go get Hagar and
Ishmael.
Of course, that came from Sarah, but still, I mean, Hagar follows through with that. And anyway, that's the kind of faith Abraham had. We're going to see some more in this chapter today. But on the other hand, all along, God is meeting all his needs. In addition to that promise about the children, you know, that's still out there.
In abundance.
Yeah. Yeah, Abraham's a very wealthy guy. And he's very powerful, right? He goes into the battle against five kings and wins that whole thing. And God's providing spouses for his kid. You know, he's being taken care of by God. The main one is still on the table, you know, now that he's had Isaac.
Right.
Of course.
Right.
then that part was fulfilled as well. But you understand, I'm talking before he circumcised it. So,
and how many, you know, and this is the question I was asking myself, Bob, is how many times do we lack that faith for the promise that's been made us?
Almost all the time. Almost all the time. It's very important to know what the promises actually were.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we participate in the promise to Abraham, but our promise to us in 2010 is not the same as it was.
Right.
To Abraham.
Right.
He didn't promise us, you know, the kind of wealth he gave Abraham and so on. He promises us, in a sense, it's far, far larger. We have eternal life.
Correct.
We are never gonna die. We will experience physical death, but at that instant, we go immediately into God's presence and we'll be resurrected. We're gonna rule the earth in the future with Him. Everything's taken care of. I mean, that's our promise. And another part of our promise is we're gonna have a difficult life because we're swimming upstream in the world. So that actually is a promise. All those who desire to live godly in this age will be persecuted. So that's part of it. But
well, and that's what 2,000 pages. You know, the more, Bob, and we've talked a little bit about my story, but the more I learn, the more I understand. You know, the things that are being pointed out over and over and over again. Today we're going to hear the covenant again with Abraham.
That's right.
And that'll be the third or fourth time it's been reiterated.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's verbatim every time. And what really struck me this week before we dive into the word is just that, you know, how many times in my life have I not taken as seriously, maybe, I don't know if I'm using the right words here, mm-hmm. but really, you know, have I really focused on the promise that was made to us with the same faith and the same,
yeah, that's right,
focus.
You know, well, I think one of the issues is particularly here in the West, when a person comes to faith, it's not all that common that they also get discipled.
Mm-hmm.
They come to faith and from there on they drift.
Right.
These are general statements. There's
mm-hmm.
tons of exceptions, but very few, in my experience, then get the Bible and start at the beginning and try to learn what in the world is going on, you know, with Christianity. And those that do begin to live differently. And
it changes your whole life.
Changes everything. And those who don't, nothing changes except 3 hours on Sunday morning. You know, I often say it this way.
Right.
You've heard me say it before. They still watch all the games. It's just they TiVo the first one or two minutes.
Right.
So they
right.
go to church. And nothing else changes. They added Christianity to their life. They didn't change. And my concern over that issue is, to me, that means they didn't come to faith. They didn't repent. And it's probably too stark. Many probably did. They just never got discipled. So I don't want to be nitpicky about who's in, who's out kind of thing. But fewer are in than we suspect.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And I think I shudder when I think of, you know, what Abraham would think of faith today.
Mm-hmm.
I really do, and you know, and again, we'll, you know, when we dive in today, we'll see it again. You know, he's not perfect. He's a human, just like we are. He was human, flawed, from Genesis 3 on. And you know, the story reflects that. It doesn't hide that.
That's right.
And his faith was still. I mean, I see such a mirror there when, you know, when all I used to see with the story of Abraham was he was a father of nations.
Yeah, well, he's a great model of discipleship.
Mm-hmm.
Abraham's a great model of that.
And so it struck me, and as I was I was preparing for this podcast, you know, and reading it again, and you really see the human qualities of not only him but his family, and it comes through in the story, and it's there. But at the same sense, I also see a mirror there where I'm looking back at myself, saying, you know, is my faith, and I think a lot of us struggle with that same thought. You know, where is my faith? How strong is my faith? Is it?
I think you're exactly right, and it's part of the reason why your role on the podcast is much larger than you think it is. Because it's to even bring up that question is crucial. It's you know, I can just imagine in some portions of the faith, people, you know, will run into difficulties in their life, and then they want this quick fix. They want God to miraculously provide some, usually a big chunk of money,
right?
You know, literally. And he does it now and then. He does that,
mm-hmm.
But it's pretty rare. Mostly he walks through it with you, and you look back 10, 20 years later and you go, oh my gosh, he sustained me every step, and I've become this disciple of his.
Right.
But people are so hungry to look for the quick fix thing, and God doesn't do that very often.
Well,
and how many Christians you know are sick? Tons of them.
Right.
Right? God doesn't heal them instantly and all that, and it's not because you don't have faith, and it's discipleship is a long, hard journey. Neither do I want to minimize the fact that God often does those things, but
right.
It's not the right perspective.
And plan A is plan A.
That's exactly right.
You know, so that's what was kicking around in my mind, Bob, is I was preparing for today and really thinking about, you know, what are we going to share today? And it really comes back to that, because I think that's a daily struggle for 99% of the planet.
Yeah.
You know, and it's all relative, you know, depending on their
mm-hmm.
on their circumstance. But
mm-hmm.
it all boils down to the same identification question of faith, at least identifying that it should be there, I think is the first thing.
That's right.
And
it looks like that's what God was developing in Abraham all the time.
Yep.
You know, we, again, to bring it back to money, I mean, that's the thing we usually hunger for. Abraham actually, my suspicion is, did not hunger for that. In their culture, I mean, that's a great thing to be wealthy, you know, in any day and age. That's not really what bothered him when he went to bed. What you wanted was children.
Right.
And he had zero. And he's so old. So he went to bed every day for 20, you know, so I'm just picking numbers, but that's ballpark, right?
Right.
From what the time God made that first promise that... So my point is, he went to bed every night for many, you know, well over a decade, closer to two, without having his main desire met.
Oh, yeah.
And he didn't really waver in that. And then when he finally did have his child, he was so great. I mean, he was even willing to sacrifice that. So
right.
His trust really was in God. It wasn't in the child.
At all.
You know what I mean? Well, yeah, pretty valuable to him, but he was willing to give even that up. So,
yep.
Yeah, he's a fantastic model in the faith.
And I, you know, I hope our listeners, you know, get out of this the same type of things that I'm getting, you know, as I'm reading this. And you know, I'm definitely not a biblical scholar. That's
you're on your way.
Yeah. But it really is, as I read these stories and then you know, you have to go to life. Life happens around you whether you stop or not. And this past week has just been a really good reminder of
Sobering reminder.
Good way to put it. So, With that, my friend, should we jump in?
Yeah. So this is Genesis chapter 26. Now, there was a famine in the land, besides the previous famine that had occurred in the days of Abraham. So Isaac went to Gerar, to Abimelech, king of the Philistines. The Lord appeared to him and said, "Do not go down to Egypt. Stay in the land of which I shall tell you. Sojourn in this land, and I will be with you and bless you. For to you and to your descendants I will give all these lands, and I will establish the oath which I swore to your father Abraham. I will multiply your descendants as the stars of heaven, and will give your descendants all these lands. By your descendants all the nations of the earth shall be blessed, because Abraham obeyed me, kept my charge, my commandments, my statutes, and my laws." So Isaac lived in Gerar, and when the men of the place asked about his wife, he said, "She's my sister," for he was afraid to say, "my wife," thinking the men of the place might kill me on account of Rebekah, for she's beautiful. And it came about, when he had been there a long time, that Abimelech, king of the Philistines, looked out through a window and saw, and behold, Isaac was caressing his wife Rebekah. Then Abimelech called Isaac and said, "Behold, certainly she's your wife. How then did you say she's my sister?" And Isaac said to him, "Because I said I might die on account of her." And Abimelech said, "What is this you've done to us? One of the people might easily have lain with your wife, and you would have brought guilt upon us." So Abimelech charged all the people, saying, "He who touches this man or his wife shall surely be put to death." Now Isaac sowed in the land and reaped in the same year 100-fold. And the Lord blessed him. And the man became rich and continued to grow richer till he became very wealthy. For he had possessions of flocks and herds and a great household, so that the Philistines envied him. Now all the wells which his father's servants had dug in the days of Abraham his father, the Philistines stopped up by filling them with earth. Then Abimelech said to Isaac, "Go away from us, for you're too powerful for us." And Isaac departed from there and camped in the valley of Gerar and settled there. Then Isaac dug again the wells of water which had been dug in the days of his father Abraham, for the Philistines had stopped them up after the death of Abraham, and he gave them the same names which his father had given them. But when Isaac's servants dug in the valley and found there a well of flowing water, the herdsmen of Gerar quarreled with the herdsmen of Isaac, saying, "The water's ours." So he named the well Esek, because they contended with him. Then they dug another well, and they quarreled over it too, so he named it Sitna. He moved away from there, dug another well, and they did not quarrel over it, so he named it Rehoboth. For he said, "At last the Lord has made room for us. We shall be fruitful in the land." Then he went up from there to Beersheba. The Lord appeared to him the same night and said, "I am the God of your father Abraham. Do not fear, for I am with you. I will bless you and multiply your descendants for the sake of my servant Abraham." So he built an altar there and called upon the name of the Lord and pitched his tent there. And there Isaac's servants dug a well. Then Abimelech came to him from Gerar with his advisor, Ahuzath, and Phicol, the commander of his army. Isaac said to them, "Why have you come to me, since you hate me and have sent me away from you?" They said, "We see plainly that the Lord has been with you." So we said, "Let there now be an oath between us, even between you and us. Let us make a covenant with you, that you will do us no harm, just as we have not touched you, and have done to you nothing but good, and have sent you away in peace. You are now the blessed of the Lord." Then he made them a feast, and they ate and drank. In the morning they arose early and exchanged oaths, and Isaac sent them away, and they departed from him in peace. Now it came about on the same day that Isaac's servants came in and told him about the well which they had dug, and said to him, "We have found water." So he called it Sheba. Therefore the name of the city is Beersheba to this day. When Esau was 40 years old, he married Judith, the daughter of Beeri the Hittite, and Basemath, the daughter of Elon the Hittite. They brought grief to Isaac.
Esau got a little bit of that one, right?
You mean in that chapter?
Right.
Got in there right at the end.
Right at the end. So the famine at the beginning, is there a reason that it says now there's a famine besides the previous? Is it just saying there's another famine?
That's right, just clarifying.
That it's that we're not talking about the same, you know.
That's right.
That it had been done, it had already.
Yeah, keep the stories separate. Even though they're so similar, these are separate stories.
Similar, almost exact.
That's right. And there's the reason for that is theological, I think, in that what God has done for Abraham, he'll do for Isaac. Right? We've talked about this before, mm-hmm. The patterns that God sets up for working in your life right from the outset. Typically, he keeps those patterns all the way through your life.
Well, and you were talking about that on Sunday, and is that an individual thing?
Yes, although it's common to mm-hmm. to the great people of faith, you know, many similar elements. In this case, it's Abraham and Isaac. You'll see similar things with Jacob. Moses also takes some effort here to distinguish, you know, God saying, don't go down to Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's coming in the future. The readers would know about that. The
right.
As a, you know, reader of the story now, you wouldn't know that until you get further into the story, but he takes pains to distinguish that. But all that to say, God establishes patterns in life.
That makes sense.
Trust him in those patterns.
I could see it. I could see it in mine. You know, mm-hmm. if I look at it through that lens, absolutely, I can absolutely see it. And now Abimelech, different Abimelech, same.
Could well be. In fact, I would imagine it is a different one. That name, as we talked about earlier, Melech means king,
mm-hmm.
Ab means father, and I means my. So every king in that area of that thing was named Abimelech. It means my father was king. It's the equivalent of prince.
Gotcha.
In other words.
So there could be 50 Abimelechs, you know, just.
Yeah. Well, is it Pharaoh? Right?
Same
if you
thing.
Say the term
gotcha.
Pharaoh, that doesn't mean it's the same guy that was 100 years ago, or it's the guy who's currently holding that title.
So Abimelech's almost a title as well as a name?
That's right.
Or
it's their title for king.
Gotcha. And reiteration of the covenant again, and we spoke about that earlier. How many. This has got to be. I didn't go back and check.
Yeah, I didn't either. But
it's got to be four or five times.
Very specific about that promise. So there's something going on, you know, theologically, this deep current
mm-hmm.
with the Abrahamic covenant that it forms to any Bible reader who gets all the way through the Bible. It's the backbone upon which the other covenants are made. It's the spine. If the Bible was a human body, mm-hmm. the Abrahamic covenant would be the spine holding the whole thing together.
Now, why would you put it, because I can see the visual, and I think I know the answer to the question, but why would you put it that way? What?
Well, things come off of this. For instance, there's a Davidic covenant later on, and that's really an enlargement on the blessing part of the Abrahamic covenant.
Gotcha.
There's a land covenant later on. Right, the Palestinian covenant, that's really an enlargement of the land promise God made to Abraham. So all the covenants that come now are enlargements on the promise to Abraham. We'll have to hold off on this other one, which is another major covenant, the Mosaic covenant.
Uh-huh.
That's alongside of the Abrahamic covenant. That's like another spine.
Gotcha.
That's not a direct offshoot of this one. Though we got to talk about it in a second here, because something important is going to come up in these verses. But.
So I see what you're saying. It definitely forms the backbone to.
It's the plan. It's plan A.
Right.
And there's a reason for that too. I mean, just think of the land promise. Recall that Eden was not the entire earth.
Right.
Right. It's
right.
A chunk. Who knows that. How many square miles, I don't know, but it's not the whole earth. It's let's start with this chunk. Now rule this,
keep
like
it.
I'm telling you, and we'll expand it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Keep this and we'll expand it. The land of Canaan is not a huge chunk of land geographically, and you could fit it in Rhode Island or something.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I actually don't know if that's true, but it's not much more than 100, 120 miles long. Who knows how wide, 30, 40, 50 miles wide. That's not a huge chunk of real estate, but it's a very similar concept to Eden. Now, let's come back here. This is this land flowing with milk and honey. Let's try this. And once we get this thing solid, we'll expand it to take over the globe. Not that you're going to possess all that land, but the influence, right? This will be the capital of the world, and we'll take over the earth that way. So it's still plan A. So the Abrahamic promise, you know, very similar to what God's desires were all along.
Now that makes more sense now, Bob, that you put it in that, you know, context that.
And think about it this way. Sorry to interrupt you, but what's hindering the plan? You know, why isn't, and God's omnipotent, right? Why doesn't, boom, it's there, done. And we take over, and that's it. End of story, you know?
Genesis
peace
3,
from now
right?
On. Yeah. Let's go back and just redo it, and boom, then we're there. And because there's a struggle going on.
Mm-hmm.
The cosmic battle is raging, and somebody's trying to prevent that promise happening. Now, God could instantly overrule that prevention, but he's got a plan, right? If his plan, we may have said this before, if his plan was eradication of evil, evil would be over.
Right.
So that's obviously not his plan. His plan is to grow the seed in the midst of evil, and he'll separate it all out at the end. He will eradicate evil one day. That's in the plan. But it's not right now. He has purpose for both evil and good growing together at the same time.
And you know what I've learned from you, Bob, and tell me if I'm on the right path here. But if he just did it that way, there wouldn't be any faith. I mean, we talked about Pharaoh on Sunday, you know, and how you know even after it took 10 plagues, and then. He's like, maybe now I'll pay attention.
Yeah, and even then he goes back.
Right, and so look at Jesus. Look at Peter. Peter's shadow, was it Peter his shadow or his garment?
Oh, well, like Paul's handkerchief.
Paul's handkerchief.
Peter's shadow would heal you.
Right.
Touched you. Yeah.
So all that happened, there were people that saw it, there were eyewitnesses, and it still didn't make the impact. So I understand now.
Yeah, and so the lesson, the big takeaway is never underestimate human hard-heartedness.
Yeah.
It's almost off the charts. And the other hand, never underestimate God's grace and his power to change that.
Right. Right. And his patience.
And his patience with it. That's right.
To change that. Because, like you were just saying, he could. He is.
Yeah, if he wanted to eradicate
it'd be gone. But that's not plan A. I think is for each of us to understand it.
That's exactly right.
So, now, I don't get this part, Bob. Well, and I guess. I do, but I don't. And I know why it's in here. But Isaac does the same thing?
Okay. Yeah, we're not there yet. I got to point out something else.
Okay.
Before we get there. So, I'm going to have to dock you on your reading.
Uh-oh.
You were
Did I miss one?
High earlier.
What'd I miss?
I think you were up to like an A-. Now I'm sending you back to... I'm sending you back to a C.
C plus?
Yeah. No.
No. Oh, no.
Okay. So, did this register?
Okay.
Verse 5. You know, I'm going to bless you, Isaac, in verse 4, because, verse 5, Abraham obeyed me and kept my charge, my commandments, my statutes, and my law. My laws, plural.
Okay. Now,
what's all that? Did you ever see in any of our chapters we've read yet, God giving Abraham a bunch of statutes and laws and...
Or commandments. No, I miss that, Bob. You know, honestly, I saw that as a reiteration of the promise.
Okay. That's a reference to... You remember who's writing this?
Moses,
who also wrote Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, Exodus, all full of tons of laws, commandments, statutes, right? But Abraham didn't have any of those.
Right.
And you, from reading that verse, you almost expect him to be walking around with like a copy of the Old Testament. He didn't have that. So why does Moses describe it that way at this point? You see, because to me, this is like, as far as Genesis goes, this is in the top three biggest ideas in all these 50 chapters. The cosmic battles, you know, maybe number one. This is in the top three. Is Moses saying that the way you really keep the law is by faith? Because that's all we've seen that Abraham has, is faith. We haven't seen him. He wasn't given laws, commandments, statutes.
Nothing.
But it's described that way here.
We're pages and pages away from that happening.
That's right. So I think that's what Moses is saying.
And I'll let you knock me down to like a C- for missing that, because I did. I read it, and you know, every time it says my or me, it's capitalized. So I mean, yeah. I saw it.
That's right.
But I didn't see that in there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you almost, as a reader, you almost take it as, oh, well, you know, we know the commandments.
You just sort of breeze over that.
Right. I know a commandment. You know, I know the statutes. I know.
Yeah, I think Moses is saying, even with all these laws I've given Israel, what I really want from you is faith. That's all. If you have the faith, it'll count as keeping the law. And that's exactly what Paul says about Abraham's life in the New Testament, that Abraham was justified by believing God.
We just read that.
Oh, yeah. It's a critical passage in the New Testament. Here's Moses, I think, saying the exact same thing, even within the law.
So how would you define faith? If it's that important, how would you define it? How would you put that? How would you...
Faith is seeing the world the way God sees it and adhering to that. You know, seeing it and then acting like you see it that way. You know, walking with your eyes wide open. That's what I think faith is. And so the natural result of that is, well, of course you would not steal, not lie, and so on, because you're seeing the way things really are. You would see how harmful it is when you go against that. You would see how great it is when you walk in truth, and so on. And I think the definition of faith is seeing the world the way God sees it.
So then, in a sense...
And trusting in that, by the
right,
way.
Right, and the absolute trust.
Yeah.
Now, in a sense, then, as the story goes, the commandments are coming.
That's
so
right.
That
even there, though, even when the, and this is, we're getting ahead of ourselves, but even when the commandments come, there's a sense. I don't hold this dogmatically. I hold this with nuance, you know, I hold this loosely. Even when the laws come, you get this sense that that's not really the main deal. You know, it looks to me, when I read through the Pentateuch, that the Ten Commandments were about all that he was going to give. And he gave more because he got, and when I say he, I mean God, through Moses, got pushed on some stuff that he would rather not be pushed on. I think it was just 10. And as soon as he gave the 10, they were broken. I mean, the instant he gave, as he was giving them, it was being broken. So, okay, here's some more. And, you know, my common analogy with that is that is so parallel to what we do with children, right? If I say, Sophia's not at this age, but if I say when she's 16, you know, be home at 11, she's not going to be, right?
Right.
She's not going to do that. She's going to come home at midnight. And then what am I going to do? Okay, next time you go out, you got to call me. I want to know who you're with.
Right.
A bunch more laws, right? My original law was be home by 11.
Right.
As soon as that gets broken, now you got to hem them in with four or five more laws. And that looks to me like what God did. Here's the 10.
Like, here's a perfect example of that.
Yeah, here's the 10. And who's even going to argue with those? Don't lie. Don't steal. Don't commit it. You know, everybody knows those. Well, as soon as they're given, they're broken. So, okay, here's some. Now I got to hem you in.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know how we got into Leviticus so much here. But.
Well, no, we were just talking about verse 5 here. With
yeah, that Abraham kept all the commandments.
Yeah, that.
And there weren't any given.
Uh-uh.
But he kept them. And so I think Moses is saying the way you keep the commandments is by faith.
Ooh, you gave me some deep thoughts on that one, Bob. That'll keep me busy for a while.
Okay, but even think, is that not, though, in the text?
It is.
That's right there.
It is. It
you
is.
Know, so it is there.
You know, this isn't a spin. It's not an angle.
It's there.
It's there. You know, because that is what Abraham did. The ultimate, and as we talked, you know, diving into the word today, it is about faith, and faith is very important. And it what was that saying with Samuel Clemens that you threw out?
Oh gosh, I hate that one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mark Twain, when he says it, faith is believing what you know ain't so.
Right.
And it's so funny when he says it because I know who he's describing. But it's so wrong. It is 180 degrees wrong.
Right. And I think
faith is seeing what's really there, not believing what isn't.
Mm-hmm. And I think we miss that.
Yeah, of course we do.
So, all right, I'll take the C- on that.
Okay.
But we're going to grade on a curve, I'm hoping.
All right.
Now, to Isaac repeating the exact same thing that Abraham did.
Okay, so you don't get it. Was that your...
Yeah, I don't...
Well, he's afraid. I mean, he says that.
Right.
Right? I was afraid.
And so was Abraham,
him.
Right?
Yeah. He's same feeling fear. The same thing. And God intervenes the same, right? And nothing happened to Rebecca. God's not going to let the chosen line get impured.
Right.
Muddied, you know, dirty.
Right.
Impure is not even a word.
I was going to say that George Bush might. That might be what in his vernacular. But so it's, but the same thing happens. So the protection is still there, and Abimelech notices again.
Yeah.
I mean, there's recognition there that, you know, you're not, you know, just Joe on the street, as you say.
That's right. Yeah, you guys are married. And
yeah.
Now Abimelech's fear is, I might have done something, because that's a pretty hot commodity. It says, right, Rebecca's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
So we got this time bomb walking around. All my guys think she's available. And obviously they're going to have to go. They perceive you as her protector, you know, her brother. Watch, so nothing's happened, but easily could have.
Right.
And his fear was, we would have had great guilt. In other words, the Gentiles don't look too bad right here. Mm-hmm. This, he has a measure of righteousness.
Absolutely.
You know? This would have been terrible if we'd have done this.
And who do they worship? Who's...
Oh, the Canaanites, you know, a thousand different gods. There's a Canaanite pantheon and so on.
Just a big salad.
Yeah, Baal and El and a bunch of different guys and women.
But he was fearful.
Yeah, he's
that's
afraid.
That's the one thing I noticed here is that Abimelech...
Because they realized that God's hand was on Abraham and that it's on Isaac. They realized that.
And it struck me, they don't know this God.
No.
And
you
know what I mean?
But they know the name, right? They say, oh man, Yahweh's hand is on you, right? They've been taught that, you know, probably by object lesson as much as anything.
Right.
Not sure how much Abraham was going around preaching, but his power, you know, as a household was such that everybody in that area knew that. So they acknowledge it. Yeah, we understand Yahweh's hand is on you. That doesn't mean they don't still think there's a Baal and an El and an Ashtaroth and so on.
But they just don't want to mess with Yahweh.
Yeah, and that's right. And they sort of correlate him with righteousness. Mm-hmm. You know, we'd have incurred guilt if we'd have done that.
Right. And so I saw that as interesting, that even though they don't worship God, they absolutely recognize him.
Yeah, I'll tell you what else, too. I would even take it a step further. Not having grown up in a household of faith, but of course living in one now and being around the Christian faith, the Gentiles quite often are more righteous than the believers. Quite often. And it's just sickening to even say that.
But it's true.
But it's true.
It's true. I mean...
It's true. And it doesn't mean they're going to be... that the Gentiles would be able to stand before God and pass the test. They're not going to either. But just as far as comparing apples to apples, they often outshine them.
No, I would agree with you. And verse 12, Isaac sowed in the land and reaped in the same year 100-fold.
Yeah. Oh, isn't that awesome? 100-fold.
100-fold.
And that's probably, my guess is that that's a, he's just using a round number in a sense. He's trying to say God really blessed him. I don't think it was like, not just 99, not 101, it was 100. I don't think that's his point. His point is saying God's hand was on this guy. No matter what he did, his bounty increased unbelievably. I mean, 100 folds a lot. Right? In one
Absolutely.
Year. I mean, think of your wealth increased 100-fold every year. It doesn't take too long, even if you start with $1.
Right. Right.
Times 100 every year adds up real quick.
It works eventually, right?
Right.
So, now, what am I reading this right? When the reason, and we've talked about this, you know, Moses is not space conscious, but he's not just throwing
stuff. He's very selective. He's got a purpose for everything he's got down there.
And is that there specifically to show us the blessing?
Yes, but it's there also. There's an even deeper point, but yes, that's right. Think of this. We're stepping outside of the text here, but just to make a point, because it ties in with what we were talking about in verse 5. What really creates wealth? I mean, you're never going to have this in economics at Stanford or Harvard, but it's God's truth. What really creates wealth is righteousness. The United States is a phenomenal chunk of land, but there are other phenomenal chunks of land in the world.
Right.
Africa is the continent with the greatest natural resources. That sounds strange when you first think of it. But oil, diamonds, they have more natural wealth than any other continent. And they are by far the poorest continent.
Isn't that ironic?
Well, until you understand what's really... Natural resources don't create wealth. What creates wealth is righteousness. Good laws, good judges, wisdom, that's actually what creates wealth. So the United States, as what's created our wealth is our laws, our system of justice and so on, our kind of government. That's what created wealth.
Right. I see what
and,
you're
and
saying.
And we
yes.
have plenty of natural resources, but that's not what did it. It's the government of the thing. So, in other words,
the human resource.
That's right. Humanity's any continent's biggest resource in the end, the human one. But so, in other words, the way Abraham was running his household, the way Isaac was running their household, they had the hand of God upon them, but that's what created their wealth. It was their wisdom in life. It was their faith, in other words. Right? They were righteous people. That's what creates wealth. Because when you have a secure system, okay, say you're really wealthy in Africa. You got a diamond mine or an oil well. You don't put your money in the bank. You don't lend your money to other people because you're never going to see it again. There's no, and obviously I'm speaking in generalities, but when there's a good system in place, the wealthy guy lets out his money, right? Go ahead and use my stuff. I'll make some interest on that. That's right. I can kick back. You guys go use it. You need money to start up a business, borrow from me. And so the common guy can rise, and wealth multiplies.
Right.
That's the strength of the United States, is the middle class. The common guy can achieve it because there's righteousness. Now, we're losing that. but that's what created
losing our toehold on that. No, that makes sense, and I think that was awesome that you pointed that out. You know, because again, this is a chapter, as we've said over and over, that most people don't, including myself, don't see the foundation that is actually being laid here, and miss, you know, that story, that analogy that you just used. I think it's very important because it puts it into perspective for everybody.
That's right.
Now, what about the wells? Is there any significance with the number of them or the names of them or what?
Well, there is, but the names are common. They're names for strife and contention and stuff like that. So there's not a whole lot of significance beyond that. But so there's not a ton of significance in the names of that. The significance is that eventually you can see that it's foreshadowing. The people of God and the Gentiles are not going to be able to share this land.
Right.
So you see in that early strife.
Well, in
now.
The Philistines, they filled up all Abraham's wells. You know, that's not a nice thing to do.
Yeah,
right?
They're arguing over resources.
They're saying, all right.
Not nicely arguing. It's, close to battle.
Well, and you pointed it out. Abimelech is afraid of God.
Well, this guy's getting and his guys are getting so big. They could take us out.
Right, and they're getting stronger and stronger and stronger.
That's why he brings his general when he comes to the meeting.
Right.
Isaac doesn't have a general, okay, but Abimelech does.
He brings, and
they're afraid.
And he says, we can even let there now be an oath between us, even between you and us.
Yeah, they don't want Isaac as an enemy.
And when he says, even between you and us, does that almost mean, hey, and you can kind of write the deal? You know, you're going to be above us in the deal?
No,
or what am
no,
I reading?
He's not
there?
Saying that. They do not want him as an enemy. Okay, they still know what Abraham did years ago at that battle. And they associate that with, these guys aren't atheists. Okay, they think Abraham's God is very powerful. And they understand now that Isaac is the heir of all that, and that Yahweh's hand is upon Isaac. They don't want to mess with that. So, we want a deal.
Right, even after I'm going to throw you out, and then I'm going to come back and say...
Yeah, we'd like a deal.
Yeah, hey, bud.
They're afraid of him.
Yeah, and there's that fear, and that's something that I have in my notes here, and that's obvious.
And there's
that
a sense
fear.
Of wisdom in it. They're right about, in a worldly sense, they're right. Isaac is somebody to fear because God has said, those who bless you, I will bless. Those who curse you, I will curse. I mean, these guys are cognizant on some level of that.
It's a sense of reverence there, right?
It's fear. It's not so much reverence, it's fear.
Straight out fear?
Yeah, we don't want to get on the wrong side of this guy.
Because?
Like you would have fear, you know, if you're in New York City, you're going to fear George Steinbrenner in a sense. You know, if you're trying to take over his territory, if you're trying to take over Trump's stuff, you fear these guys, you know. So, same thing. This is a very powerful family, and they fear that.
And they speak with God. Isaac, you know, called upon the name of the Lord. That's another something that I haven't noticed brought up, but with a couple of people so far. Abraham.
Right. Yeah, it's the channel that, who knows how thin the stream is at this point.
Yeah, good picture. Yeah. Exactly.
It's not the Amazon. This is a tributary
right
now. This little mountain stream. It's going to be the Pacific Ocean. Okay, but right now this is a little trickle.
And he calls upon the name of the Lord. The Lord appears to him, right? The Lord appears to Isaac, and we've talked about that in earlier podcasts.
And
that's
think
a vision,
of the context,
right?
You know, he's having these run-ins with some of the most powerful guys.
Yeah.
In his knowledge, you know what I mean, in the world for that time.
Well, that'd
you know,
be
his
like
general just came to him. He's, you know, your little Isaac, you're just a household. These guys are nations.
It'd be like President Obama coming to you right now and wanting to strike a deal with
you
in a sense.
Yeah. So you have some fear as well, and here's God, you know, showing up to you, going, I got it. You're the promise, you know, my hand's on you. You're safe and sound.
So they celebrated, fellowshipped, and then Esau comes back.
Yeah,
For two verses.
Yeah, well, Moses has to, you know, tie up the story. And what do you take from those couple verses? I mean, just a couple, right?
Yeah, 34 and 35, right?
Yeah, well, what's the...
The seed of the woman is not being, is the Hittites, right? They're
he's marrying into their enemies.
The daughters of Heth, am I right?
Yeah, that's right. Esau is not part of the promise. And that's showing up more and more. And that brings his parents grief. But it's right there.
Yeah. And then the next chapter, I'm going to have a bunch, because I don't understand that one either. But it's, you know, this whole foreshadowing with Esau that we're getting here now is, you know, it's going to kind of be a launching board into our next podcast.
Yeah, and also, you know, keep this in mind, just because we always try to encourage reading the Bible skillfully, you know, picking up what Moses is putting down. Part of that is a thing called story time. So, you know, it didn't take us but a couple minutes to read chapter 26, verses 1 through 35. But decades went by. Esau's 40 years old. At the end of 25, Isaac and Rebecca just got married.
Right.
So 40 years have gone by, even though it took us 2 minutes, 3 minutes to read those verses, a lot more to discuss it, but to just read it is 3 or 4 minutes.
Right.
40 years went by. So you just have to keep that in mind as a reader, you know, how long. So in other words, what chapter 26 gave us was a summary of what those 40 years were like for Isaac. Right, these kinds of conflicts.
And then here's what happened to Esau during the same time.
Yeah. Well, after 40 years. Yeah, when Esau was 40, here's what he did. So they've been raising these kids.
Wow.
For 40 years now.
Wow. At home. No colleges back then.
Homeschooled. But Esau apparently just kind of, his favorite class was PE, right? He's out there hunting every day.
But Dad liked the meat.
Yeah, Jacob's there learning everything.
Yep.
Yeah, Dad loved the game.
Dad loved the meat. So, did I miss anything other than the C minus? And I, you know, I marked that in my Bible, Bob. So I won't miss that one again.
All right. Well, it's good to miss in the sense that
right?
You get trained. You know what I mean? Yeah, you learn.
Absolutely.
You learn how to read what God's really got down there. Don't forget our favorite picture. You know, by the way, we don't do our podcast that often in our homes anymore.
No.
It's never yours, and even my home. We go to Kathy's office, but so whenever I reference this, that's the chair I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Right over there. So you imagine, you know, God sitting in his chair, in his living room, and you're his kid, and you're able to sit on his lap, and he holds the Bible in front of you, and you read the words together, and he, you know, shows you what's going on. So that would have been one of those things. He would have, gosh, I hope I'm not putting words in his mouth, you know, but I believe he'd have pointed that out. Hey, you see this? I didn't
what
give
do you
Abraham.
Think that means?
Yeah. What do you think that was? I didn't give him any laws and statutes other than what every man knows. You know, everyone has a conscience. But what do you think Moses was saying there? By my command, right? That this is the way you keep the law, by faith.
My friend, you give me more to think about than I think my brain can hold sometimes.
Well, you know, of course, that's not me. I'm only going to rabbit trail that for one second because it's a great way to say it. When we get to the Gospels, Jesus is constantly doing that with his disciples, constantly expanding what they thought.
Right.
And so that's one way to describe discipleship.
Well, I tell you what, that was a good mind stretch right there.
There you go. So, what would we call this chapter, Jamie? You know, we don't name these till afterwards. Of course, our listeners see it on the website, but we want them to know we didn't come up with those names till we discussed them first. So what would you call this chapter? Why don't I let you name it? Should we name it, in a strange sense, how to keep the law? Keeping the law by faith.
Keeping the law by faith. I like that.
Genesis 26:5. Keeping the law by faith.
All right, brother. Should we close this one with
let's do it.
With the prayer?
Lord, we thank you for your never-ending faithfulness and goodness, and the way that time stops for us when we read the Bible with you. We're thankful for that respite. Thank you for that meal. Thank you for that measure of peace. And we pray for the power of your words to continue to go forth and accomplish what you have set for them to do. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen.